Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you with it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. You know what to do. The whole world's watching and counting on you. And all you people listening out there, everybody, everywhere.
Hang on, hang on, hang on!
Welcome to Checkered Past, a loving postmodern examination of the Go-Go Check branded comic magazines published by DC Comics between February 1966 and August 1967. I'm Dr. Bob, and each week I'll be your guide on this trippy tour through 535 mid-century masterpieces of graphic noveldom.
This week, Our Army at War number 176, cover date February 1967, cover price 12 cents, cover artist Joe Kubert, edited by Robert Kaniger, featuring Give Me Your Stripes, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Joe Kubert, and GI Combat number 122, cover date February-March 1967, cover price 12 cents. Cover artist Joe Kubert, edited by Robert Kaniger, featuring Who Dies Next, written by Robert Kaniger, art by Irv Novik. Are you ready? Are you with it? Then away we go-go.
Fluffy clouds move by us.
See how the clouds move by.
See how the morning mist can hide us away.
Hide us away.
And how the day is so much fun.
What? Easy Company receives a new replacement, Crusher Cole, a big soldier that intends to take Sergeant Rock's stripes, plus a kitten. Meanwhile, Jeb Stuart receives a warning from the ghost of General Stuart that one of the team will be lost by the end of the day. Worried about his crew, Jeb acts to protect Rick, Arch, and Slim from danger. After saving each one of them, Jeb thinks the general was predicting his doom. Confused? Don't worry, I'll be right back with Dr. Husband to explain everything.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
Just woke up from a nap a little while ago.
A nap?
Yes. Didn't you have a nap?
A little bit.
A little bit.
Not much of one.
Look at you with your smart haircut.
Well, yes, I've had all my hair chopped off.
Yes. You went short, didn't you?
I sure did.
Gone summer.
Yes. And here it is, the middle of winter.
Oh, isn't it awful? It's not quite the middle of winter. We're on the tail end of winter. But yes, it's quite early in the year for you to go so short.
Well, I was ready for a change.
Well, what about me?
What about it? You're letting your hair grow all goody like a hippie.
I know. I went in to our gal the other day like you did.
Uh-huh.
We go together, don't we?
Yeah.
Since I'm on sabbatical.
And we have a gal.
We have a gal. And I said, don't touch anything except just trim it up around the ears and the back. And of course, she waxes my neck.
Yes, well, I don't have that affliction.
Well, because I have my hair grows so quickly and it always has been. I always get my neck waxed.
Yes,
because if they clip it, then I have to ask you to go in and clip it again in about a week.
I don't like to be asked to do anything.
No.
Why don't you get one of those laser hair removals situations?
I thought of it, actually. It would certainly save. I mean, it would be an expense at first.
But sure.
It would certainly save on the monthly waxings that I have to do.
It'll pay for itself over time.
It will. It would, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so anyway.
Speaking of time, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
What's it been?
30.
32 years.
32, can you believe that?
That's the average age of our listener, I bet.
I think our listeners might be a little bit older.
Well,
yeah.
Agree to disagree.
Okay.
Got any plans for our anniversary?
Well, I'm hoping you'll join me for dinner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I do like to eat.
Yes.
And I don't have any other plans.
Yeah, good.
So, sure.
Good.
Are we going to a fancy restaurant?
Yes, we're going to the press room.
Do you suppose they have oysters?
Oysters? Do they have clam, mussels, or oysters? They probably have both.
Well, I prefer all kinds of shellfish.
Yes, well, I do like the oysters.
Sure.
Yeah.
And fancy cocktails and all.
Oh, yes. Why not celebrate?
And looking forward to a snowstorm this week.
Oh, my God. Yes, another one. Another one. I hope. I hate to say this, but I wouldn't mind a snowstorm, seeing as how I just got our snowblower completely repaired.
Right, you got to test it out.
Oh my God, so expensive. It could have been avoided. I didn't know.
Well, now you do.
Yes. Well, listener, I had been using a mixture of ethanol. You know, I've been using ethanol, which you shouldn't use in small engines ever, including your lawnmower. You should purchase. You go to the last pump. Over in, you know, your local gas station, and make sure you get just regular gas. I mean, not, you know, it's unleaded, but no ethanol in it, because in about 60 days the ethanol turns to gunk inside your engines and can clog up those small engines. We burn through it in our cars with no problems, but it causes problems with small engines.
Well, why don't they tell you that at home ec class?
Well, I think everybody else in the world knows but me.
Well, so. Where has it been publicized?
So it clogged up our carburetor.
Yes.
In our snowblower, and the thing had to be taken apart. And I looked at a video on how to do it, and I'm not shy of doing these things.
No.
And after watching the video, which was about 45 minutes long, YouTube, and tells you, and the guy said, "Now take a picture of this as you're taking out the carburetor, because you're going to need to carefully reassemble it just like this, and then do this thing here." And I'm like, nope, hard pass, paying for it, yeah.
Smart move.
Yeah, and they did our lawnmower too, and I was glad to see, I'm glad that they discovered that one of the blades had been bent quite a bit, which is why when I was cutting the grass, no matter how many times I tried, I'd get an uneven cut. So, I should probably stop cutting the grass really low when the grass is growing and hitting those rocks, because you know we live in a rocky area.
Very rocky area.
Which actually bends up the blades. I know, but I...
Did they straighten it out?
Yeah, they put new blades on.
Okay, good.
And, you know, they recycle the metal and stuff like that.
No, sure, yeah. I didn't know about that, but...
Yes, yeah, so there we go, and here we are, and, our neighbor's pulling in. You can't see him, but he's pulling in to his driveway, yep.
Okay.
We're glad to see he finally got his trash cans in.
Finally, the president of the HOA left his trash cans sitting out on the curb for days and days.
I know, we saw him walking to his mailbox to retrieve his mail, and then walking away and leaving his trash cans there, and I figure he must want to have... one of those children he has living at the house. He's probably like, well, that's their job. They'll take care of it.
I never did anything like that during my administration. We had a clean curb, I can tell you that.
He kept a clean curb.
I wonder what Sergeant Rock's been up to.
What has
Do you suppose he's been fighting the toughest battle of his life?
Oh, God, I can't get my damn screen to open.
He's dealing with a fellow that's too big for his britches, I can tell you that. Spoiler alert, I've read ahead.
Well, can't blame the kid. He was an orphan.
So?
Well, that's what's driving him.
Well, we're both orphans, and you don't see us tootling up to Sergeant Rock.
We weren't raised in orphanages.
No.
No.
But, still, my point stands.
Okay, he's fighting the toughest battle of his life.
Our army at war... Number 176, February 1967. Sergeant Rock is on the cover by Joe Kubert, firing a gun right at a Nazi's chest.
Yeah.
Good enough for him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you get for being a Nazi.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Sergeant Rock.
Oh, we're inside.
Crusher Cole was new to Easy Co., but he had an old idea, and he worked at it until it looked like it almost would come true. Every time he saw me, I could hear him say, "Give me
your stripes.
Give me your tired, your poor, your hunger masses yearning to be free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest tossed, to me, so I can put put them right onto a C-180 and fly them to Guantanamo Bay. I had to change the lyrics for modern
times. I was watching your lips to try to figure out what you're doing.
Crusher Cole is a new replacement in Easy Company. Mm-hmm. He looks as solid as a load of concrete after it hardens, and he has dots for eyes.
Oh, you said it, damn it!
What?
I was going to say, he has dots for eyes.
He does, like Orphan Annie. What's up with him? Well, she was an orphan, too. Yeah,
maybe that's
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah. I get it. Crusher Cole is eager to meet Sergeant Rock, mm-hmm. whose fame precedes him, and his handshake is like a
bear trap.
Bear trap.
Yeah. Crush, lots of ideas.
Lots of ideas. I'm going to get me stripes like yours, Sarge. Maybe even yours.
They're yours if you earn them, Cole.
Suddenly, the air is torn by a splash of flame.
They're beginning to shell the road. Flat and eat dirt. Flat and eat dirt. Oh, here we go.
Easy Company's being shelled. They've got to saddle up and get out of here before the shells start walking over them.
So he's yelling at him to pull out all the stops and retreat.
Retreat, retreat.
To a safer area.
Yeah. Crusher Cole says, what's up, Sarge? Ain't you never seen shelling before?
Sarge yanks at him with a force that would have lifted anyone else off the ground.
I don't want any dead heroes in Easy who can't squeeze a trigger when it's needed, so move, man. You heard my order.
Okay, Sarge, okay. No need to press the panic button over a couple of shells. When I'm top kicker, there'll be less running and more fighting.
I don't like this guy already. He's bucking authority.
I like his voice, because I did it. I like it. You can keep on doing Sarge's voice. Sarge's voice is supposed to sound like your dad, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, Sarge says, look what a mess the shells are making of mm-hmm. this place. Crusher doesn't answer.
Nope.
He just looks at Sarge's stripes like they were steak and French fries.
If I had stripes like that, people would look up to me. They'd forget that I was in an orphanage all my life, that nobody cares whether I live or die. Nobody. I got nobody in this world.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong.
I got nobody.
Sergeants are non-commissioned officers. That's correct. Is that correct?
NCOs.
Well, I think this kid ought to go to West Point or something. Go to officer training school.
Well, this is the war here.
Well, sure, but they still had West Point during the war. They get away from the shelling. They get to a low hill. And it looks like there's Nazis up on top of the hill, staring straight down at them.
Firing at them from a pillbox.
Now, Sarge orders Bulldozer, Jackie, and Wildman to take the left. Little Sure Shot, Ice Cream Soldier, and Sarge will hit him from the right. Move out.
So he figures on splitting up the enemy fire.
Yeah.
But something happens.
There's two machine guns coming from this pillbox. Mm-hmm. Pillbox, you know, is a little thing dug into the hill where they stick the guns out of. I'm assuming that's what's drawn on the page.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I thought it was just a tank. But you're right. It looks like it's a... something dug into the ground.
Yeah, like a pillbox hat.
One of our listeners is an expert on this, and he'll know. But
sure.
Yeah, I think you're right.
The machine guns can cover both sides of the hill, and so here comes Crusher running right up the middle.
Right up the middle.
With a bazooka. Sergeant Rock orders the rest of Easy Company to cover him, but he runs up the hill. He's firing at the pillbox from a stance as solid as concrete. Do I hear an ATV vehicle out in the street?
As a matter of fact, you do. Our HOA president is in his bright green hoodie, and he's taking uh-huh. his ATV out and about. I don't know what he's up to, but you did hear it, as a matter of fact.
I know what he's up to.
What?
He rides across the street, directly across the street, to talk to his neighbor.
Do you know what he does?
What?
He will ride his ATV to the mailbox, which is right at the end of
at the end of his driveway.
Yeah. And the last HOA meeting I went to, some uh-huh. of our neighbors were there.
Yeah.
And, of course, it had snowed, whatever, and I just walked across because he's literally within view. His house is within view of our house.
Yeah.
But
We're not stacked on top of each other like cordwood, if that's what you're wondering. It's
one
lovely...
of the neighbors said, you walked all the way over here. I said...
across the street?
Yes! Our neighbors from two doors down sent me that. And I said that to me. I said, what was I supposed to do, drive?
And they laugh like, oh, well, you know, in this weather, I said, yeah, that's what my feet are for.
Are they insane?
Maybe. Maybe they're insane.
They were the instigators.
And they drove. They drove.
Across the street.
Across the street.
Well, they were the instigators of Garagegate, which put an end to my administration.
Yes, they were.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, they can drive all they want then.
Yeah. All right.
Idiots.
I love it when we include some neighborhood
gossip. Sure. Crusher's running right up the middle of the hill. Bazooka's the pillbox.
Tears it right open,
giving Sergeant Company an easy company and opening to start punching.
Punching Nazis.
And look at all the stars they're punching out of those Nazis.
Yeah, lots of fists and faces.
Yes.
I like that.
After the pillbox had
like
a...
It? Do you like it?
What? The panel. I love it, that panel.
Great.
Yeah. After the pillbox had a vacancy sign punched up on it, Sergeant Rock commends Crusher for his shooting.
I'm shooting for something, all right, Sarge, but it's not a pillbox. What I'm sharpshooting for is your stripes, Sarge. That's what I've got my eyes pasted on. Your stripes.
Jesus, give it a rest,
Crusher. Oh, he won't give it a rest, though. That's what he talks about all the time.
All the time.
Give me your stripes.
Did he have a psych eval? Because he's a little obsessed.
I know, and that's what we start with, this next panel. Talk about your stripes.
I'm best stripes. Stripes, stripes, stripes. Gotta get stripes.
Now, Sergeant's trying to keep the rest of Easy Company from giving him the cold shoulder, because they are not having it. All you're earning is your pay, soldier.
Sarge has been in more fights than you have hair in your scalp, pale face. Oh.
Well, that's a little short shot.
But I'm not doing
that. No, don't do that. All right. Sarge says, listen, Crusher's got a right to my stripes, like any other Joe, if he earns them.
God, it sounds like your dad.
Thank you. Just then, the air sizzles with scorching lead.
It's one of their firefighters. He must have seen the action. Now he wants to be a part of it.
He's flying so low he could spit in the eye of a potato. So they've got to fire some ammo into the sky.
Well, they're forming. They're getting back to back so that as it's flying toward them, some guys can be shooting at it, and then as it's flying away, the other guys are hitting it right from behind.
That's a sound strategy.
Well, except that it makes a really nice solid line for the thing to aim at.
Sure.
For the pilot to aim at.
They fire, kapow, kapow, kapow.
Pew, 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 pew.
Then, who do you think comes up with his bazooka?
Rock Crusher.
Crusher. It's a 1,000,000-to-1 shot, but it pays off. Crusher downs the Nazi airplane.
Yep. And the pilot. They're all dead. Like, they don't get into fist fights with him because he's dead.
Sure.
Because he's dead.
Now, the company is ready to congratulate Crusher, and he says, Now, okay.
Now, let's see you guys tell me I'm not worth Sarge's stripes. Go ahead, tell me.
And then...
Okay, Crusher.
He's still sounding off when they reached the town that had been leapfrogged by armor. He says, we're supposed to... Wait, that's somebody else's voice.
That's Sergeant Rock. We're supposed to hold this place till the rest of the outfit comes up to join us. Meanwhile, check out everything that ain't nailed down.
So, there's a sniper.
Sarge catches movement in a window of a upper story.
And of course, Crusher's been going on, like I said, Sarge, I!
Sarge knocks Crusher out of the way, fires into the window, gets the sniper. And listen, Crusher, that's part of what makes a great top kick, taking care of his men.
Yeah.
Like the way Sarge just saved... Oh, that's someone else talking.
Yeah.
Like the way Sarge just saved your hide from that sniper.
You idiot. That's enough. That's enough chewing the fat. Let's get on with this checking out this joint and keep our eyes peeled for more snipers.
Now they uncover some booby traps, flush out some more snipers, and the town is theirs if they can hold on to it. And the orders are to hold it no matter what until the rest of the outfit hooks up with us.
But
just then more shelling.
Oh my gosh, they're getting shelled. From where?
It wasn't hard to figure out from where. The enemy didn't give up this town. They just moved to the hill, so they'd be looking down the throats of anybody moving into the town.
From the vantage point, they could stand up there and look down on the town and just fire at people, like, you know, fire at troops.
The only way to hold the town is to take that hill. So let's get on with it. We'll hustle out as soon as the shelling lifts.
And as they moved out, Sarge heard Crusher.
Oh,
the Sarge is putting his stripes on the line in this attack, and I'm going to pick him up.
You better concentrate on picking your boots up, pale face.
As the men regrouped at the bottom, Sarge noticed.
They're using the buddy system.
Yeah.
All the Joes have their buddies. Only Crusher is alone. He's made the men put him in the deep freeze with his braggadocious behavior.
Stupid stripes.
Then
what? I forgot this part.
Thing happens. Oh my god!
Suddenly there was a meowing. Something tugged at Crusher's boot.
Meow. Meow.
Crusher's got a kitten.
You picked me to be your buddy, puss. Okay, I'll take care of you.
No, Sarge doesn't have the heart to break up the pair as Crusher pours some water from his canteen into his helmet.
And then he puts, Crusher puts the kitten.
The little kitten.
In his pocket. Of course, when he did that, I thought, no, that kitten's going to get killed.
Well, sure, and then here's Crusher. Stay here in my pocket. You'll be nice and warm and watch me become a sergeant. He's not going to get a battlefield promotion, is he?
No. No.
Then it was time. They rush the hill, dig out the Nazis, and discover that there's a second line of infantry.
Yep.
That they have to fight.
And they fight them both and take both down.
But yep.
Just as they finish that, oh my gosh, what happens?
Well, there's a tank at the top of the hill.
Loaded with a cannon, and it has a rifle hole, or I don't know, like a opening for a rifle. So mm-hmm. They're firing both a cannon and a rifle at the troops.
Pouring lead right down our throats. Eat dirt.
Yeah.
They can't raise their heads without the tank knocking their heads off. Crusher and Kitten.
Oh, poor Crusher and Kitten. He says, I'm going to get that tank, Sarge. When I do, you'll hand over your stripes.
That's not how any of this works, Crusher.
So Puss can see, right, Puss?
Meow.
God. So this man, this greenhorn...
Yes.
Crawls up the hill with his bazooka with a cat in his pocket to take down a tank.
A tank. Well, what can Sarge do? He's got to have the rest of the boys cover him. Maybe he'll make it. He gets to the top of the hill and he's shot.
Yeah.
Sarge is going to rush over to see if he can fire the bazooka. He gets to Crusher.
Sees him there.
Crusher's dead, but the kitten's alive, thank goodness.
Well, Crusher's out.
Kitten's licking his face.
He's dead, yeah, he's dead.
He tries to take the bazooka out of Crusher's hand, but he can't shake it loose. Crusher's got a death grip on it.
And then suddenly the tank is barreling down the hill toward the combat boys.
Sergeant Rock is hit with a rat-a-tat-tat.
He grabs Crusher's hand and aims the bazooka.
Okay, Crusher, here's your last shot.
And this is why, I guess Crusher, Sarge imagines him saying this. I told you I'd win your stripes, Sarge, and Puss saw it all, didn't he?
Oh, maybe that's his last words. Maybe he wasn't dead.
Yeah, so he pulls the trigger on the bazooka that Crusher's got a death grip on.
Yep.
And destroys the tank.
And buries Crusher with his rifle and puts his own sergeant helmet on top as a grave marker. Crusher did earn his stripes after all, but it was the last thing you did.
Meow.
The cat's meowing.
Do you suppose we'll ever see this cat again?
Probably not.
But what if, though?
Wouldn't that be great?
Yes.
Sergeant
Rock and Kitten. What rank would a kitten be? Corporal? What's lower than sergeant? Private?
Well, I don't know the ranks.
DFC?
Of the army.
Well, I don't either, but I'm just going to make up. Private kitten.
Private.
Private Kitten.
I could write four issues right now of Private Kitten's adventures in the World War II.
Yeah.
Well, that ends on a sad note.
That is sad.
Like most Sergeant Rock stories do.
Yeah.
We better perk things up with a Time Machine mailbag.
Time Machine mailbag, where we read letters from the past and answer them today. Time Machine mailbag, better late than never is what Mother used to say.
Dear Dr. Husband.
Yes?
I am 19 years old and deeply in love with a boy who is 23. He asked me to marry him, and I said yes, but he wants to wait a year so we can save money. My problem is this. I've been going with him for 7 months, and he has only taken me out twice. I feel it is his place to ask me out, and he hasn't, so I have asked him, and he refuses. He has no excuse. I almost feel he is ashamed of me, but I don't know why, as I am neat and clean and pretty. I have never had this trouble with anyone else. If I were to go out with someone else, he would stop seeing me. As it is, I only see him once a week. I love him very much, and I don't want to lose him, but I don't think he is playing fair. Could you give me some advice, as I don't know what to do? Signed, Jill.
Well, Jill, there are a couple clues in here that give me some pause. First of all, you've only been out twice, and he asked you to marry him. He's 23. And that makes you, let's see, how old is she?
19.
She's 19. Okay, he's 4 years older than she. He's 23. She does say that she's neat and clean and pretty. But I am concerned that you've only been out twice and she's agreed to marry him.
Yeah.
So without knowing how long they've known each other, if they grew up as, you know, as childhood friends, or if he's a friend of the family or whatever, I'm going to say I think you need to put a pause on things. Now, I don't generally like to encourage people to be materialistic. I think that pragmatism is important. However, I am concerned that you are jumping the gun here. I don't think that he's embarrassed as you see it. Perhaps you're being a little too self-absorbed here. But if everyone in your circle and his circle does go out and he's not taking you out, I think maybe you need to think, maybe you might want to put a little pause on this, on this relationship. What do you think?
Me, Jill?
Yeah,
sure.
Jill.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, I would be just concerned about why he's not taking you out. Not so much because there are a lot of things you could do together. That sure. Don't cost a lot of money.
Sure.
You know, and spend time together. And it sounds like, from the little bit of information she's provided, that she'd like to at least go through a courtship phase that's a little bit more public. So yeah. I would be concerned. I'd definitely say, you might want to put the brakes on that marriage.
Sure.
So, shall I take one?
Yes.
Dear Dr. Bob, I have a problem. I am 15 and in love with a boy named Don, who is also 15. We have been seeing a lot of each other, and I know he likes me as much as I like him. About 2 weeks ago, I was at a cookout at Don's house, and I met his cousin, Teddy. I like Teddy immediately. In fact, I think I'm in love with him, too. My problem is that both Don and Teddy ask me for dates, and I don't know how to accept dates without hurting the other, or without losing both of them. What should I do? Signed, Linda.
Linda, lose both of them. Step one. You can't get in the middle of a family squabble like that.
Mm-mm.
Not a girl of 15. You're not equipped, emotionally, to handle cousin rivalry.
Yeah.
Unless, is this a situation they're like identical cousins, like Patty Duke?
Oh.
Because you could get into some antics.
Yes.
Like, go out with one, and then run to the bathroom and come back and be with the other one.
Yes.
Wait, how would that work?
Well, one date is taking place in the living room, and
yes.
The other date is taking place in the rumpus room.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And they'll be none the wiser. And you'll have fun, too, because they're identical.
Right. I think that's a great idea.
Sure.
Also, if they're identical, that's what you should do.
If they're identical. Now, yeah. One, if they are identical cousins, one is going to be driven wild by a hot dog. And the other is in love with the ballet Russe. Oh, that's Teddy. So Teddy's gay because he likes the ballet. So, sure, Linda, you know, have fun. But don't make any marriage plans. Not like poor Jill.
No.
God, no, Jill. You don't want to trade places with her.
No. We have another one?
Dear Dr. Husband,
mm-hmm.
I have a problem that might sound very silly, but it is so important to me. Maybe you can help. I am almost 16 years old and have been dating boys since I was about 14. Most of the time I got along pretty well, but every time I thought a boy was falling in love with me, I ran into the same problem, and here it is. I have flaming red hair, and none of the boys I've dated liked it. I don't know what to do. It seems that as I grow older, the problem gets worse. I am getting too old to be called Carrot Top. My mother is absolutely against dyeing my hair. What do you think I should do? Signed, Betty.
Well, Betty, here's what I think. If you are seriously concerned enough about this to be dyeing your hair or considering dyeing your hair at 16, you're an idiot. And you need to back off from the dating scene and wait to get a little bit older, maybe even go to college,
mm-hmm.
where there will be a larger pool of boys that you can date, and you'll realize that having flaming red hair is a wonderful asset. This coming from someone who fell in love with someone who was a ginger before, when they were using Sun In.
Yes, Betty, I made my hair flaming red on purpose. And it snagged me a husband.
Yes.
So hold tight, sister.
Don't you change anything about yourself just because you want to be perceived as like everyone else.
No, because what happens if you land a man and you get married and then your roots start to show?
Oh, my God.
What are you going to do then?
Yeah, just keep that up for the rest of your life? I don't think so.
I don't usually like to recommend the competition, but you need to check out Mary Jane Watson over at Marvel Comics around this time. You'll see that redheads do just fine.
Yes, and they have a higher tolerance for pain.
Is that true?
It's true. They do. Redheads have a natural higher tolerance for pain.
You know why?
No.
Because you know where red hair comes from.
No.
Neanderthal genes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Time Machine Mailbag, where we read letters from the past and answer them today. Time Machine Mailbag, better late than never is what Mother used to say.
G.I. Combat Ground Infantry with the Honda Tank. He's punching a Nazi right on the cover, just like the other cover we saw. Punching a Nazi so hard that his helmet's popping off.
And his jaw's going awry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's old Jeb. Jeb Stuart.
Jeb Stuart.
Pilot of the Honda Tank.
Yeah.
And the only one who hears the Confederate General Ghost talking to him.
Yeah.
The crew of the Honda Tank faced the question every soldier has to face.
Who dies next?
This is GI Combat number 122, cover date March 1967. And right there on the splash page, the Honda Tank is getting rammed by an airplane.
Mm.
That seems dangerous on the part of the airplane pilot.
Yeah.
The general who haunted our tank, General J.E.B. Stuart, warned that one of us would die before the day was over. Which one would it be? Slim, Rick, Arch, or me? I asked, but did not get the answer to.
Who dies next?
I have to tell you something. You can believe me or not.
All right.
Right on the splash page.
All right.
I knew who was going to die.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I was just trying to stay awake before
I was about ready
to head into a nap. I was starting to doze and come on, stay awake, yeah.
Uh-huh. As my M3 Stuart tank clanked along the road, I swept the woods on both sides with my binoculars because this will be a great place for an ambush. But I don't see a thing in the woods on either side of the road. Guess this is our lucky day.
But just then, ambush from a woodpecker.
It's a Nazi up in the trees.
Up in the trees.
He's been hiding.
Yeah.
Jeb had looked everywhere but above. That'll teach him a lesson.
Yeah, there were more parts to this ambush than the first one. They were blocked by a tree trunk as their tank continues along. And they could easily clear it by heading into the woods. But maybe that's exactly what the enemy wants them to do.
It sure is, because here come Nazis swinging down from the trees.
Like
the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, I thought that must be where they got it from. the Ewoks.
But sure.
From this comic.
Yes. Well, George Lucas had a number of influences from classic popular culture.
It surprises me that the Germans were hiding in the trees.
Why?
Well, I'm assuming this takes place in on the European
soil
because, so the trees in Europe are very much like our trees here.
Deciduous forest, yes.
Right? So they're not going to give them great cover.
Unless it's summertime.
Well, even in the summertime, they're going to have to be, it helps them to hide at great distances, but not right underneath the tree. You can see everything up in a tree when you're under it. Then again, I guess by the time you're under it,
it's too late.
It's too late, yeah.
Maybe this is the Black Forest.
Ooh.
And haunted. What if it's haunted? Well, the tank is haunted.
The tank is haunted.
What if the forest is haunted?
Why not? Let's just go with that, okay? So who comes out and helps him out here?
Well, Slim backs up the tank, which throws the Nazis off balance, giving Rick and Jeb a chance to display their fisticuffs. And Rick ducks back inside the tank. The tank takes off through the woods, I guess off of the road.
And encounters another tank.
Another tank. The enemy tank comes out from behind the trees where it had been hiding. And they miss. And Rick now has a chance to fire the haunted tank's guns. Mm-hmm. And one shot's all it takes. That other tank is blown up. That tank looks awfully small to fit four grown men inside.
It does look small, doesn't it?
It looks like one of those cardboard Polaris subs they sell at the inside front cover of the comic.
God, I wish I had one of those.
Same. You can get them on eBay.
You can?
Yes.
Huh.
Want one? Free birthday is coming up.
No. A smaller version of me would like one, but not this guy, this hulking mass you have sitting in front of you.
Dropping weight.
I might be dropping weight, but what am I going to do in one of those Polaris cardboard subs? Sit in the living room and just sit?
Maybe.
Just sit.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Think about how Kitten would love it.
He would love
it. Not Sergeant Rock's Kitten.
No, our Kitten. Kitten would love it.
I know.
Yes, Willoughby would just enjoy it.
And it's made of cardboard, so it'd give Junebug something to chew up when she's nervous because we're not home.
Yes, Kitten's up there. Mr. Willoughby is up on top of his kitty condo.
Uh-huh.
Fast asleep.
Sure.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't
Do you know what he did? He's what? Doing this thing now. So he's done this twice now in the last week. He comes in here when I'm playing guitar, right? And he goes about his business, you know, eating some food and grooming himself. And, you know, and then he goes, then he gets interested in me. And he goes, like he just carries on and on and on, and he comes and he walks around and he meows and meows, and then I stop and I pet him and I go back to playing guitar, and he's like meow 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 meow. It is like this is something you never see him do anywhere else in the house. You know, he's just talking and carrying on. I'm like, what do you don't actually want me to stop and like pay attention
singing.
To you. He's what?
Singing.
Oh, I hadn't thought about music. That.
Well, that's the first thing I thought of.
Oh, my God.
Maybe he's just admiring the catgut strings. Is that my mother? Meow, meow. Just then, drifting through the smoke of the dying Nazi tank, General Jeb Stuart.
I have to turn the page here.
What's the good news for today, General?
Ghost General? Not good, Jeb. One you count as your own will not be with you at the end of the day. That one will be dead.
Who, General? Who? Slim? Rick? Arch? Me? I should have known better than to ask for the answer, because he won't answer. He never does. He's just fading from view.
Yep.
Jeb looks down into the tank at three well-known faces, grimy with the sweat of battle and with the sweat of being stuffed into this tank with no room to move.
And then, of course, he tells them exactly what Ghost Jeb has told him. Ghost Jeb's true. Yes, because they say, which one of us? Which one? Which one?
No, that's him thinking. That's a thought bubble,
Rob.
That's Jeb.
Thinking. Rookie mistake on my part. I'm sorry about that.
One of us? Which one? Which one?
Well, I guess he doesn't tell him.
No. What's the matter, Lieutenant? You look like you just seen a ghost. Oh, right. You do see a ghost that you talk to that none of the rest of us can see.
They do know it, right? That he talks to the ghost?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. Okay. That's why I thought that they had said that. Which one of us? Which one?
Yeah. Oh, no.
No, I know. Thought bubbles. Yeah. Okay, so I won't make that mistake again. So a couple of hours later, they had parked the tank and were chowing down.
That means eating.
Yes.
Jeb orders Slim to fill the canteens in a stream that they passed a little ways back.
Mm-hmm.
He looks at the men he is breakfasting with, Rick and Arch. Which one's going to die? Rick or Arch or me? Then he remembers, Slim is all alone down at the stream. I'll be right back. Guys, look after baby.
Baby's what they call the tank.
Baby is the tank.
Yeah. So he catches up to Slim, and just as Slim was bending over to fill the canteens, pew, pew, bang, bang, bang.
Shot rings out from the woods. The sniper shot had come from one of the trees across the stream. Slim misses being killed.
But the canteen's gone.
Yeah.
It's been shot. I'm sure it could be plugged up with some chewing gum.
Jeb sees movement along a branch and nails the Nazi.
Gets the Nazi.
Now, the general may still be right about him or Slim if the sniper gets a bead on him, but they get him and knock him out of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And rejoin the gentleman at the tank. Slim's all right. The lieutenant got the sniper, and it looks like it's not Slim the general meant,
yeah.
Jeb thinks, that as means indicated by his thought bubble.
Yeah, it means it's either Rick or Arch or...
Or Jeb.
Jeb.
Part two.
Part two.
Before they could get inside the tank, they have visitors, a Nazi hijacking party. Mm-hmm. They think they've got us and baby. The only way they'll get our baby is in dreamland. Let's and start punching.
We get an awesome big panel of fists and faces.
Yes, this artwork is Irv Novik.
It's good.
And these World War II boys sure do a lot of punching versus shooting.
Oh, I would beg to differ. You just don't... You do see them shoot often. If you go back, you'll see lots of shots being fired, but...
Just not in these big panels. It's right. It's always punching.
It's always punching, right. Well, also, you're just not going to see at this time. You're not going to see, like, a panel with the lower right-hand corner with just a hand and a gun, and then you see it, you know, up at the upper left-hand corner, a chest exploding open.
If only.
Yeah, you won't see that.
In the midst of the battle... Jeb suddenly notices that Rick is about to be shot. Must be him, the general meant. And it's going to happen right now unless I do a flying tackle and knock him to the ground.
Yeah, he did. And he did. He saved his life.
Now, this Nazi can still shoot either one of them mm-hmm. and make the general's warning come true.
Mm-hmm.
The rifleman's muzzle swings toward them. And Jeb fears that he's going to hit them both.
Mm-hmm.
But just then... Arch busts out of the melee and shoots the Nazi dead in a small panel.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last bit of the fight. They get back to the tank.
How did they all get in there?
I don't know. Yeah. Rick blacked out, but now he's fine. Jeb explains that Arch saved their skins. So... Slim and Rick have escaped death. That leaves only Jeb and Arch.
That's it?
Yes. Jeb can hear the guys gossiping in the tank about how the Nazis sure would have liked to carry off baby as a prize. It sure was a close call for baby. It was closer than us for us than it was for baby. Baby, baby, baby.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
Day isn't over yet. A little while later, they come upon a lone American soldier traipsing through the woods.
Interesting. I knew what this was right away.
Did you?
With the panel right there, I knew exactly what this was.
This soldier explains that his Jeep is a little ways back, stuck in the mud. But your tank could easily yank it out. How about it, sir? Sure thing, soldier. Hop on. I'll just walk ahead and lead you right to it, Lieutenant. It's not far. I was sure hoping to meet a tank, and then you came along.
Well, something buzzed in my brain. Funny, that's the first infantryman I ever met who doesn't take advantage of a lift when he had a chance. They're always complaining of all the walking they do.
That's so typical of Army soldiers. Complain, complain, complain.
I got the funniest feeling that we're following that guy as if he were a Pied Piper. Where's he leading us to? And it was just as he said. There's a Jeep, all right, stuck in the mud, only he forgot to mention that it's carrying an anti-tank weapon.
Uh-oh, I suspect foul play.
Yeah.
Jeb orders Slim to turn immediately. It's a trap. With the enemy disguised as American GIs and using a captured vehicle. Get our guns working! Get our guns working! Good news. The guns work.
Guns work and they tag the Jeep.
Yep.
And they get the guys killed. Killed.
But now some more phony GIs come out of the woods and start attacking. Jeb's trying to get inside so they can close the hatch. But he gets KO'd
by... China!
By one of these Nazis. The guys yank him back in, but they don't get the hatch closed in time because the Nazis throw in a live grenade.
Without hesitation, even as they were all sweating, Arch threw himself down on the grenade.
Gulp, the general meant Arch. Arch is the one that's going to get it before the day is over. Aren't they all going to die if a grenade goes on inside this tiny tank?
I think if Arch throws himself on it, he'll probably absorb most of the shrapnel. Good God. That's a horrible hell way to die.
Good news, everybody. It's a dud. It does not go off.
Bang.
Psych. They get back to the tank. They rumble through the woods, knocking these Nazis left and right. Jeb now knows that everyone had a brush with death and lived except him. I'm the only one left. I'm the one that's going to die before the day is over. So after he's sure there's no one out on the outside, he opens the hatch again, pops his head out, and thinks, the general's never been wrong with his warnings. I'd better get all the fresh air I can now before I stop breathing altogether.
Mm.
I wonder where my end is going to come from, and how, and when. He should be working for Stars and Stripes as a reporter. He's got all the questions down. Who, what, why, where, when. They tangle with another tank in the woods.
He thinks maybe this is where I get it. Yep. Here now.
But Baby pulls through and blows the other tank to smithereens. Finally, they come out of the woods into an open field. The day has only a few minutes to go, and anything can happen in that time. Namely, I can be killed.
Right.
Just like the general said.
And the anything... was at the other end of the field.
An enemy fighter plane, which must have been set down for repairs. It's starting to taxi again.
And the plane and the tank, they all open fire on each other.
Yes. If they don't get it before it takes off, it'll clobber us from the air. Now, at this distance, it's not a fight, it's murder.
The cannon shots that ship is pegging at us will rip Baby apart.
They manage to set the plane afire, but it continues on a kamikaze run and rams right into Baby.
Right, which is going to be devastating for these guys because the tank catches fire.
Jeb is sure this is where he's going to be killed, but he orders everyone out of the tank because the tank's on fire. And
it's like basically buried beneath this flaming plane, and everything inside is catching fire and burning.
Baby's finished, sir.
Yep. The flames lit up in the darkness as we started back to our lines, and through the flames, I saw the general.
I just realized, Ghost General, you meant the tank when you said one of us would die today. General, Baby sure is a part of us.
I alone heard the general's whisper as, you'll get a replacement. You'll get a replacement. Which will be as much a part of you as a horse to a cavalryman. Or any weapon which becomes part of a fighting man. Until it seems alive. Farewell for now, Jeb.
Bye. I knew on the splash page when the tank prominently had the name Baby scrawled onto the side.
Yeah.
I don't recall that before.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember the tank having the name Baby.
No.
Yeah.
So, I knew it was going to be Baby that died. I, you know, they wouldn't kill one of the quartet.
No, and I guess they, so the general only haunts the tanks that Jeb is working with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's, I think he's Jeb's ancestor.
Right, right. So he just resides wherever Jeb goes and works.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
So what happens when Jeb gets out of the army after the war's over? Does the general just, like, hang out at his house?
I don't know. I'll have to do some research on
like, that. Or his car? Like, when he goes home, does the general inhabit his car?
Like my mother, the car?
Yeah.
He's a car. General Stewart, the car.
Or Herbie the love bug?
Yes. You know, General Stuart's a real general.
Yeah.
He's got a historical marker right up the road, Hagerston.
Yeah.
Well, you knew that, so.
I did. Well, I appreciate you mentioning it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I never read Army comics before doing this podcast, and I kind of like them now.
I have to tell you, I dreaded these when we first started doing them.
Yes.
They are among my favorite types.
Well, you'll be glad to know that we very soon have an Army at War 80-page giant coming up.
Oh, my God.
With some characters we've never seen yet.
We'll get probably, what, World War One too, is correct? World War One?
No, I think it's all World War Two.
Okay.
But it's we've got Mademoiselle Marie, who's a French resistance fighter.
Mm.
We've got Gunner and Sarge and Pooch.
Wow.
Johnny Cloud, the Navajo ace.
Wow.
You can't believe it. You can find us on social media at GoGoCheckPod. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your free podcast downloads from. And you can find us right back here next week with a Valentine's Day special.
Yeah. Right?
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Mr. Wind, just keep us sailing.
Keep us sailing along.
Fun. So everyone come on.
Hey, you on the ground.
You on the ground.
Take a look up and see what we found.
Nothing to tie us. Bluebirds come up to guide us.
When you're beside me, we can fly.